Hey everyone, my name is Alex Jones. I'm from Annapolis, Maryland, and I'm currently serving as a maternal and child health volunteer in Peace Corps Rwanda. The following is a reading from a recent blog post of mine entitled Umuganda. Thank you for listening, and I hope you enjoy. Everything was set up perfectly. I had worked fastidiously to make sure of it. I swept my house of all dust and dirt, I cleaned out a pot, and boiled a fresh batch of piping hot water. I'm a newly discovered and self-proclaimed tea guy, so I arranged my inventory in descending order. Fancy Earl Grey to kick off the morning, followed by some Chinese tea I got from a friend, and then countless cups of cheap Rwandan black tea, which most times doesn't taste like much more than a slightly tinted water cup. My lounge chair was cleared of its symbols of neglect, the clothes, bags, and books that are always piling up, and prepared for its duty of a long sit. My front door and windows were open, letting the cool early morning breeze blow lazily through my small Rwandan home. My Kindle was loaded with this morning's star of the show, my latest and perhaps most ridiculous literary venture, a nonfiction account of the first month of World War I as told by author Barbara Tuchman in a book called The Guns of August. In reading history books with my older brother, I've come to find that I'm entirely fascinated by the First World War. Last I read, King Albert was about to answer the German ultimatum, Belgium's sovereignty was about to be violated, and the English were undecided about getting into the war, even though they had to know that the German Schlieffen Plan dictated a German right wing through Belgium. But I digress, I'm sorry. It was going to be a big morning, is what I'm trying to say. It was the best morning of the week, Saturday morning. In the first couple months of my house, when we were restricted by Peace Corps from traveling, and no one even had a mind to because they were figuring things out in their own villages, I had many Saturday mornings to myself, unencumbered and completely alone. I read, I wrote in my notebook, I drank tea and stared out the door at the hills as the early morning hours and the Rwandan clouds slowly passed me by. It was very relaxing indeed. I grew to love it. Back at home in America on Saturday mornings, what did I do? I would wake up late, I'd go from laying down in bed to laying down on the couch, and I'd flip on the TV and watch shows like Naked and Afraid and stupid dating shows like Rock of Love, Love of Ray J, all reruns, by the way. It was a sad sight. So suffice it to say, I was happy to replace my old useless habits with the new productive ones. But as time wore on, and we surpassed our travel restrictions, plans with friends and other engagements started to bully their way into my Saturdays. Before I knew it, I was behind my reading, I hadn't jotted down any silly ideas in my notebook, and I found myself longing to have that quiet magic back. On January 27th, I had reclaimed such a morning. No plans for the weekends, no friends coming in to stay at my house. I woke with my mind fresh and the day long. After everything was in order, I went to clean my cup outside right before I sat down. And standing at the threshold of the door, surveying the early morning light on the hills, I looked out. And I saw them. There were 30 of them, from what I could tell. They were in my village, they were within eyesight of my house, and they were on my hill, the hill I exercise on all the time with the kids. Most of them had a hoe, beating hard on the dusty ground while the African sun beat down on them in kind. It looked from my distant vantage point to be a trench or a hole, though I couldn't quite tell. But with each forceful drop, I could hear the question in my own mental voice asked over and over again. Alex, are you finally going to get off your butt and help with Umuganda? It's not like I didn't know Umuganda was happening. I know when it happens, from morning until 11 on the last Saturday of every month. I'd been trying to coordinate and participate with my Rwandan friend Thierry for some time now. Months ago, I'd caught him in the afternoon, after Umuganda ends at 11:30, and had been told that he and his Rwandan brethren had gone down the road to help build a school. I lit up at the idea, as I always do when I consider the idea of Umuganda. It is a cordoned off time where every citizen in the country is encouraged to go out and better their community, usually by undertaking any number of public works projects that require some level of manual labor. It would be a time to bond with my neighbors, to show them that I'm willing to help and I'm serious about being part of the community. And probably most important, to bring ruckus with a hoe. It sounds great on every level to me. So I told him I wanted to help and to let me know that I would definitely be at the next Umuganda. Then the next one came a month later. Rwandans gathered together, picked up their tools, and ventured out to do their community work. But I was gone, out of the community for that weekend. Then the next month came. Last Saturday of the month, as it always was. I wasn't feeling well enough to do it that weekend, and I didn't know which village it was even happening in. Then the next month came. The transportation of the country shut down for the morning hours to encourage it, as it always did. But I don't know. I just didn't do it again. Excuses, I know. This morning, though, they were right there, and I saw them. I had to think about things. I had everything set up so nicely, you know. It was set up so nicely that I used the word fastidious to describe it. The hot water, the teas, the comfy chair, the Kindle, the guns of August. I'm reading a book about World War I, after all. Shouldn't the smug book gods give me a break? Doesn't this fall within their jurisdiction? Can't they hear my pretentious pleas? Can I forget what I just saw and pretend it never happened? Go back into my house and go on enjoying my morning? What was I going to decide to do? So, for your listening entertainment, the following is a verbal representation of my inner dialogue at that moment. I can't. Just can't go out there. Wasn't prepared for this, you know, mentally and, you know, in my mind. Can't do it. Physically, can't do it. I'm too tired. It's way too early. So, let me get this straight. These people have made this place your home, but you're not going to go outside to help your fellow Rwandans so you can sit? So you can sit in a chair? Do I have that right? Listen, I want to harsh inner voice. I get it. I really do. But I had a tough week of work, and I was really looking forward to relaxing this morning. I need this. For real this time, though. Most other times, I would agree with you, but this time, it's legit. Oh, you're right, buddy. You had a tough one. Like all those naps you took. The mark of a hardworking fella, I always say. They really took the life out of you, those naps. And man, oh man, all that chocolate you ate, that'll really do a man wrong. You remember, don't you, all that delicious American chocolate you couldn't help but indulge? Look, I earned that chocolate, okay? I eat well, I'm in good shape, and it was tasty. I enjoyed it. Oh, of course it was good. It's the best. You're right, you earned it. Because you worked out so many times. Oh, wait, that's right. You went for one run this week, and you sat around and ate chocolate for the rest of the time. But no, you're right. You earned it. I did. I did earn it. I did. That run made me very sore, okay? It was a tough one. That was a hard run. I was very sore. And I had to cook the other days. Everyone has to cook. Everyone has to cook. They're humans too, aren't they? That's true, but I eat a lot. I'm a big guy, you know? And I live alone. Rwandans don't live alone. I have undue responsibilities. Undue burden, that's like a legal principle, man. If this was a Supreme Court case, they would rule in my favor. If it was on the docket, this is like Jones versus Kagame. The defendant holds the right to stay inside during Umuganda. Case closed, that's it. Jones versus Kagame, what are you talking about? Oh, you live alone. So do literally all of your friends. It's Peace Corps policy. It's written into their code. There are over 170 volunteers and straight up everyone has it worse than you, you infant giant. You know what? Don't do it. Don't bomb the men of the village. Don't show good faith in the Rwandan experience. Just stay inside. Oh, and, you know, have a good cry while you're at it. There you go. Ah, that's good. Yeah. Okay. Jones versus Kagame was stupid. I got carried away. I have a lot of friends in law school, and sometimes, you know how it goes. I'm sorry. I'll give you that one, harsh inner voice. Hey, quick question. Does your back ever get sore from the constant pats you're always managing to give yourself? I do hear they have a cream for that. Maybe someone can send it to you along with more chocolates, you man toddler. Listen, you're a figment of my imagination. You don't get to talk to me this way. Just hear me out for a second. I have some pretty good... You nap almost every day. All right. I'm getting my things. I'm heading out there. And so it was. With the appropriate attire on, I ventured out. This wasn't the type of thing I would do under normal circumstances. I didn't know anyone up there. I didn't even know if they would let me in with them. Who knows if there were even enough tools for me to work with. The odds were that none of them spoke English and that my good intentions would hit the brick wall of the language barrier only to explode in a blaze of fire. But my harsh inner voice had spoken. Once I saw them, I had to go. Spending the day knowing that I willingly did nothing with faced with the prospect of bettering my own community was a price that I wasn't willing to pay. I always laugh to myself in these situations. While I tend to arrive at the right choice when it comes to decisions like these, it takes me a lot more time and mental calculus than I imagine it takes my friends who are better volunteers than I am. As I walked up the hill, I took stock of the situation. There were well over 30 guys. The distant view from my house robbed me of the perspective around the hill. Indeed, they were digging a trench for rainwater, and the trench led down to a big hole on the side of the road. I didn't quite understand what the purpose was, but it was safe to say that it was to be a reservoir for rain runoff. And as they dug, they removed the heavy, clay-filled clumps of grass and soil and used them to repair the deep grooves in the road worn by foot and motorcycle traffic. I questioned whether this method would work, but I was there to do some labor, not try my hand at civil engineering. It seemed as though they'd been doing this for a long time, so I kept my thoughts to myself. The walk went by quickly, up until they saw me. When the eyes fell on me, my legs grew heavy and time slowed down. the long, lonesome walk of the single foreigner, relatively nice clothes and Adidas sneakers on, all the way up the hill. For all they knew, I was coming to lodge a complaint and tell them to cease and desist. To have me show up unannounced and try and work the earth was probably the last thing they expected of me. I could hear the calls being made even before I made it to the first person. Mzungu, Mzungu, meaning the foreigners here. A lifetime spent with guys on teams had prepared me for this moment. When you're getting made fun of or when someone's calling you out, there are a few things you can do to combat it and only one thing you can't do. The best thing to do is to lean into it. Stand tall, acknowledge it, and just laugh at yourself. The only thing you can't do is show that it bothers you. So I took a deep breath, wore a smile, and every time someone called me a foreigner, I laughed, waved, and pointed to myself. Yeah, that's me, Mzungu. It's this guy I see. Having arrived at two guys with hose and shovel standing in a hole, I made my intentions known to anyone who could hear me. My speech was subtle, yet forceful. I imagined myself like a Cicero in the Roman Empire. I believe I struck all the right notes and walked the treacherous political tightropes. I spoke in Kinyarwanda. I want to help. Umuganda, yes? I am here to help. Is it possible? After that, I didn't know what else to do. I hadn't thought much past this point. I just straightened up and waited for a response. Whereas Rwandans meet most of my little speech proclamations with silence, this one inspired raucous laughter, a laugh that only a bunch of guys hanging out are able to produce. Immediately, I laughed with them. The whole thing was absurd. Less than a year ago, I sat in the stately halls of the Senate, clad in a suit and tie, meeting with health policy stakeholders, writing vote memos and press releases. Now I stood here, alone, in the middle of Africa, laying myself at the mercy of a bunch of village guys I didn't know, and all I genuinely wanted to do was to be granted the vaunted privilege of digging a crude hole in the ground. Life comes at you fast. So there's a flurry of Kinyarwanda, only some of which, of course, I can understand. Before I knew it, a couple guys were pointing to the hole, and one of the men in the hole gave me a slight nod, raised his eyebrows with a shrug, and lifted his shovel. The nonverbal message was clear. Hey, go for it if you want, pal. Before I knew it, I was 4 feet down, shoveling red dirt out of a big hole. I could feel many of the guys taking a break to watch their little sideshow entertainment for the day, with what sounded like live color commentary coming from their buddies. I imagine it kind of like a carnival main event with the guys with the pointy mustaches making the announcements for everyone, you know what I mean? He would be like, step right up here, step right up. We got a special treat today for you fellas, a Mzungu all the way from, you guessed it, America. The incredible, the stupendous, the fantastic digging foreigner fellas. And yes, we are taking action. Can he last more than 3 minutes? Will he cry? That's the play, gentlemen. And if you ain't got the cash, then pick up your hoe and get back to the trenches. Oh, sorry about that. I perhaps have an overactive imagination, but I could catch a phrase here and there, and I was finding that, actually, everything turned out to be pretty positive. As I kept my head down and hauled the dirt up and out of the four-foot hole, many of the guys seemed to be pleasantly surprised that Afite Imbaraga, which means he has strength. I heard some laughter and some repeating that, yes, he did want to do this. After I spoke some Kinyarwanda, shocked onlookers announced to the others that he knows Kinyarwanda. He knows it. Knows, of course, is a strong word. I can say, how are you? I obviously don't know the past participles of verbs, but I was happy to prove some people wrong. Time went on, and I did make it past 3 minutes, and no, I never cried. I tuned out the talking and kept to my task. I knew the situation was ridiculous, but I was there to help. How long can you laugh at a person who's helping you do manual labor? Over time, the sideshow ended, and I was able to work within the group. After the hole, I picked up a hoe and got to the trench. After the trench, I helped patch the road. I was laboring alongside my new neighbors in a true display of goodwill for the community. We were working hard, but we were also having a laugh every now and then. By the end, there was a trench, there was a hole, and the grooves had been filled with dirt, smoothing out the rocky road. The community came together and worked together to accomplish a common cause. This is Umuganda. When the work slowly came to a standstill and the clock fell past 11, the mood seemed to indicate that it was time to go home. And go home I did. I smiled to myself, thinking that for today, I was able to do the right thing and overcome the integrative odds. There's a constant tension in Peace Corps experience that I think every volunteer knows. We are of, but ultimately not really of, the communities we live in. We try to integrate as hard as we can, and in the good moments, we flash our language skills with a good conversation, or we successfully host a neighbor. But at other times, you can feel out of place, like a square peg trying to jam itself into a round hole. For someone like me, with a big appetite that requires constant cooking, writing projects to undertake, and graduate school studies to do, leaving the house to integrate can feel like a monumental task, made all the more difficult by a love of solitude. But leave the house I must. Connections aren't made by osmosis. You have to venture out and do things, even if it means leaving the comfort of your Saturday morning to talk to strangers and do laborious tasks. For this, I'm grateful for the unique Rwandan convention of civic volunteering. It is a well-laid pathway to the land of integration, and all I have to do is bring myself to walk down it. The day wore on, and indeed, I returned to my comforts. And when I rode into town to meet with friends, I recognized my driver. He had been there that morning, working alongside me with a hoe in the trench. His face was alight, and although I couldn't understand what he was excitedly saying, I could get the gist of it. He was thanking me for working for the community. I could feel his pride in his home and his gratitude. I smiled, nodded, said "Yego" several times, and when the ride was over, went about my way. Walking away from him and giving him a thumbs up, I thought to myself, I'll never miss another Umuganda.